Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable. Plato is one of history's most influential thinkers, the sublime philosopher, whose writings remain foundational to Western culture. He is known for the brilliant dialogues in which he depicted his teacher, Socrates, discussing ethical truths with prominent citizens of Athens. Yet the image we have of Plato on the is this figure far removed from society and politics who conjured abstract ideas in peaceful groves is a fiction created by Plato's admirers and built up over centuries. In fact, Plato was very much a man of the world. In the new book, Plato and the Tyrant, The Fall of Greece's Greatest Dynasty and the Making of a Philosophic Masterpiece, acclaimed historian and classicist James Rahm draws on personal letters of Plato, documents that have long been kept in obscurity, to show how a philosopher helped topple the leading Greek power of the era, the opulent city of Syracuse. James Rahm is the James Ottaway Jr. Professor of Classics at Bard College and editor of the Ancient Lives biography series from Yale University Press. He will be in conversation. The book comes out tomorrow officially. Tomorrow is the pub date for the book, and there will be a celebration at the Oblong Bookstore in Rhinebeck, and James Rahm will be in conversation with the president of Bard College, Leon Botstein. So a wonderful event that'll be taking place tomorrow at Oblong. Again, the name of the new book is Plato and the Tyrant, and it's a great pleasure to welcome James Rahm back to our program. Good morning. How are you?
I'm well, Joe. Thank you.
It's really good to have you back. We always love talking to you about your work, and especially this particular subject. I'm very happy that you were able to join us. What brought you down this particular path of looking at Plato, and it seems to me sort of correcting the record a bit?
Yes, indeed. I first encountered Plato's letters some years ago, and they totally blew my mind. Why did I not know about these texts before? They show an intimate view of Plato, an inner life that we don't see in his dialogues, where he never represents himself. And they tell the story of his interventions in the city of Syracuse, which led to a catastrophic civil war and the near destruction of an entire Greek city.
So bring us to the point of how you set the parameters of the story that you're going to tell, of where this is going to, where you want to begin, where you want to end, and ultimately how you set it up.
So the story covers about 30 years, the three decades from about 390 to 360, the time of the greatest dynasty in Greek history, the father and son, both named Dionysius, in the city of Syracuse on the island of Sicily. And it was also the time at which Plato was composing his great masterpiece, Republic. And my book shows how those two things are interconnected by Plato's three visits to the Dionysius regime in Syracuse.
And that is what he was writing when he was bringing together a masterpiece. And obviously we look at it that way now. What was looking to be accomplished in the moment?
So Plato was a political theorist, as we know from his dialogues, but also a political activist. So he went to Syracuse, which was ruled by these two towering patriarchs, these two tyrants, in order to try to reform their regimes and make it into something more philosophic, something more like what he imagined in the Republic.
And how much, I mean, he knew of the violence going in, right?
No, the violence only started as a result
of him going.
Of him going. He actually lit the spark, lit the fuse, which created a catastrophic explosion and really brought the regime down.
So what was it then that was that spark between the between ultimately them and the father and son?
So his principal interactions were with the son, who we could call Dionysius the Younger. He was a young man when he came to power, about 30 years old, and very ill-formed. Apparently, his father had kept him kind of in seclusion growing up, so he hadn't developed social skills, hadn't gotten an education, and invited Plato in to teach him and make him a more philosophic person. And Plato undertook that challenge, but soon found that the court of the tyrant was riven by factionalism and jealousy, and his relationship with the tyrant's brother-in-law, a man named Dion, created the suspicion that he was actually trying to overthrow the regime.
You write about this, but talk a little bit about the relationship that Plato has with Dion.
So Dion was a man about 20 years younger than Plato. They first met when Dion was 20 and Plato was about 40. And they formed a very close bond, as we know from Plato's letters. I discuss in the book the clear evidence that it was an erotic bond, that they had essentially a long love affair. And Plato never married, and as far as we know, was only interested in men, not women. And Dion seems to have been his lover over the course of decades.
And this is a dumb question, I realize, but obviously that plays into all of this.
Yes. So the bond between them was so close that it ignited this jealousy and paranoia in the ruler, in Dionysius the Younger, who saw their collaboration as a conspiracy.
When you think of, but at all of this going on, Plato is continuing the work, and how was that set out, and what ultimately did he know what he wanted to accomplish at that time?
You mean by writing the Republic?
Yes.
Yes. So the Republic, as I discuss in the book, it was written over the course of his entire life, his adult life, maybe a period of four decades. It was the one work that he devoted decades to, that he tried to put all his most central ideas into. It was really his masterpiece. And for that reason, it's today the most widely read of his works. In fact, the most widely read, or widely assigned anyway, of any text at America's top universities, according to a survey taken in 2016. He designs a state, an ideal state, one might call it, in the Republic, ruled by a philosopher, someone trained in his kind of philosophic thinking, the philosopher king, as we call him today. By going to Syracuse, he had a notion to bring about some small portion of that ideal, that is, to make a ruler more philosophic and make the regime more in line with his ideals.
I'm just curious of what it is like for you and assuming your colleagues as well to teach the Republic.
It's a hard text to teach. We teach it at Bard. In fact, it's right now the center of our first-year seminar, which is a required course for all of our first-year students. It ignites a lot of discussion, a lot of opposition, because a lot of its principles are regarded as proto-fascism. The rule of the philosopher king is an absolute rule. It's an autocratic regime founded on philosophic principles and yet controlling the population in the way we associate today with autocracies.
And continually relevant, right? I mean, as good philosophy is, I assume.
Oh, incredibly relevant. The questions that it raises about the nature of justice, our perceptions of reality, whether we can learn from the world that we see with our senses, perceive with our senses, or whether we have to look to abstract ideas outside this world, the project of education, immensely important for college students, but really for everyone. What sort of teachings do our young people need, and what things should they not be exposed to? These are all vital questions that are raised by the Republic.
What was it that was happening with Plato and in this time that led to some of those ideas that led to the criticism of lacking the practical application and freedom, creativity, so forth?
So Plato lived at a time, those who know anything about Greek history know the war between Athens and Sparta, the Peloponnesian War, was a disastrous war and led to defeat of Athens by Sparta. So Plato felt that the democracy in which he'd grown up had failed, and he was ready to abandon it, as were several other Greek intellectuals of his time. It seemed as though democracy was a dead institution. So Plato proposes in the Republic a new form of government by philosopher king, to replace what he thought of as a dying institution.
So by going into Syracuse, talk a little bit, as you said at the beginning, this is a 30-year period of time. So when does the trouble really start?
So the trouble starts in 365 when Plato's about in his 50s. And Dion is in his 30s. As I say, they're about 20 right. years apart. The ruler is younger than both of them and very unstable. And so when he sees that these two men have a close bond that excludes him and they have a communication that he's not part of, he begins to worry that this is a conspiracy. And he arranges to have Dion exiled, banished from Syracuse and from Sicily, and to live out his life in mainland Greece, apart from his family and his estate.
The idea being that there would be basically an overthrow.
Right. He feared that this duo, Dion and Plato, were out to overthrow him.
When you look at something, well, how true is it?
You know, it's a very good question, and I leave that question open in my book. We only have Plato's testimony in which he presents himself as a teacher with noble motives, trying to educate Dionysius, make him a better ruler, with the support of Dion. But the truth may be more complicated, and other people suspected the two of them as having their own designs on the throne. Later on, Dion did take over Syracuse and oust his brother-in-law from power with the help of Plato. So it's not impossible that was their goal from the start.
But that is far from a happy ending, right? I mean, that is far from what they ultimately would have thought of as, oh, okay, this is going to work out.
Yes. The regime of Dion proved to be as problematic as that of Dionysius before him.
Almost disastrous, right?
And led to disasters of various kinds. A civil war, basically, that ravaged Syracuse, destroyed much of the city, led to the loss of population through death and emigration. Syracuse was reduced to people were grazing their horses in the market square by the time it was all over because there wasn't any economic activity anymore. There is a remarkable rebound. That's the last phase of my book. But before that, Plato was at the heart of a true debacle.
How much of what was going on was the mood of the room, as it were, of the mood of the people, that there was this feeling that democracy had failed?
So democracy, in fact, went on another 80 years or so past the end of the Peloponnesian War. Demosthenes, one of the great heroes of Greek politics, tried to defend it and represent it as a thriving institution. But the right wing, as we might call it, among which we should situate Plato, had given up and was looking to strong men for rescue, for redemption.
When you look at these several of the things that I've in the book is descriptions of it have called what Plato was doing as an experiment. Is that an apt word?
Yes, very much so. I call it the Syracuse Project, which is a similar concept, that this was a chance to put into practice on the ground things which he had theorized about in Republic. In fact, he even says his motive for going was so that people would not say he was all talk and no action. He had theories about how to make government better. Well, here's a chance. If he didn't try it out, he would be accused of being just hot air.
And how good was he of realizing what was happening and putting that into a proper context?
He didn't do well at all.
There wasn't learning from his mistakes, in other words.
And didn't even learn particularly well, because he went back a second time after his first visit with Dionysius the Younger blew up in his face, resulted in the exile of Dion. He went back a second time 5 years later, and things went even worse. So one could say that he didn't learn very well and was not adept at politics whatsoever.
When you think of what, I was reading an article, I guess, I don't now remember where it was, certainly you have heard of this, where they talk about the tyrant and what Plato can teach us about the moment that we're in, and specifically about Donald Trump. Are you interested in making any comments about that?
Yes, I would comment that Plato has lots to teach us about autocracy and about the perils of looking to a strong man when democracy doesn't seem to be going well enough. Democracy was functioning not particularly well, but still functioning in his day, and he thought it was time to junk it and move on to some other model. And that proved to be a lot worse than the system that he had given up on.
So tyranny is the goal, not the byproduct.
Tyranny, well, he wouldn't have called it tyranny. He would have called it kingship.
Yes.
But rule by a single powerful individual was his goal. Yes.
And as far as, because what is often used, the term to describe all of this that we're going through now is chaos. And this is what you're writing about, is just this utter chaos.
Exactly. Yes. Syracuse descended into chaos. Incredible loss of life, property, and economic activity. The greatest city in the Greek world was reduced almost to a village before all was said and done.
Is there anything that we can take from that and take from your book, anything that's, positive?
Well, I think the, what I hope people will take away is a sense of Plato as a person. We think of him as a disembodied mind having these great thoughts in a peaceful grove. In fact, he was a very complex person. He had the normal kinds of flaws and failings of that all of us experience. And I think to see him as a human being and not as a disembodied mind makes him a lot more interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. The name of the new book is Plato and the Tyrant, The Fall of Greece's Greatest Dynasty and the Making of a Philosophic Masterpiece. The book is just out, comes out tomorrow, and it's published by Norton. James Rahm will be in conversation with the president of Bard College, Leon Botstein, tomorrow at 6 p.m. at Oblong Books in Rhinebeck, New York, and you can find out more information by going to oblongbooks.com. Oblongbooks.com. Again, Plato and the Tyrant. James Rahm, it's always a pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you so much, and have a great event tomorrow night.
Thank you, Joe. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book, Plato and the Tyrant. It is published by Norton, by James Rahm. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.